The Basement Review wants to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. Forget takeout. HelloFresh delivers all the ingredients for delicious, healthy meals anyone can prepare at home in less than 30 minutes. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use promo code REVIEW50 to get 50% off your first order. Hi, I'm Jason Collette, and you're listening to the Basement Review Podcast. In this episode, we have one of our favorite Basement Review alums, the Mississauga Anishinaabeg Indigenous poet, storyteller, academic, and musician, Leanne Simpson, performing a song off her amazing new record, Flight, and chatting with us about the fascinating intersections in her work. Leanne strikes a match in the dark of our tangled-up history and leaves us with a glimpse that is as devastating as it is beautiful. And speaking of beauty, the incredible Sarah Harmer sings a new song from the Al Purdy songbook I made mention of a few episodes back. Welcome to the Basement Review.
I live in Peterborough, down the street from the Canadian Canoe Museum. And so this poem is called How to Steal a Canoe. It's sort of a user's manual if you need to steal one. Is barefoot on the cement floor, singing to a warehouse of stolen canoes, bruised bodies, dry skin, hurt ribs, dehydrated rage. Ekwenze says, it's canoe jail. The white skin of a tree is for slicing and feeling and peeling and rolling and cutting and sewing and pitching and floating and traveling. Ekwenze says, oh, you're so proud of your collection of Indians. Good job, Jagannath. Good job. Kwe is praying to those old ones by dipping her fingers into a plastic bottle of water and rubbing the drops on the spine of each canoe. Soft words, wet backs, wet fingers. Ekwenze and Kwe are looking each canoe in the eye. And one says back, take the young one and run. Kwe looks at Ekwenze. Ekwenze takes the sage over to the security guard and teaches him how to smudge the canoe bodies. Fake cop is basking in guilt-free importance. Kwe takes the young one off the rack and onto her shoulders. She puts her in the flatbed and drives her to Chemung. She pulls her out into the middle of the lake, sinks her with 7 stones, suspends her in lake, fills her with wet. Kwe sings the song, and she sings back. Kwe sings the song, and she sings back.
All right, our next guest first made a nationwide impression in the 90s with her scrappy Kingston, Ontario outfit, Weeping Tile. But it was her debut solo album, You Were Here, that secured her a fine piece of real estate in all our hearts. Released back in 2000, it appeared on many critics' year-end lists, including Time Magazine, which called it the year's best debut album. That record would go on to be certified platinum, and she would go on to become the multi-Juno Award-winning household name that she is today. Beyond being one of our country's finest singer-songwriters, she also co-founded the organization Pearl, which stands for Protecting Escarpment Rural Land, which was a hard-won campaign to protect the Niagara Escarpment from a proposed gravel development which would have removed precious parts of wilderness from the escarpment. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the epitome of grace and poise, the one and the only Sarah Harmer.
I am so glad I did not send in a bio. That is nice. Thank you so much, Chase. So Jay Collette asked me, put me in touch with Brian Johnson, who was making a film about late great poet Al Purdy. And it's now out as a film, the Al Purdy Was Here documentary. And so I wrote a song that was kind of inspired by some of Al Purdy's poems and the place that he built with his wife in Prince Edward County in the 60s as a place that was a bit of a magnet for people to come and hang out and drink wine and carouse and fight and write and jump in the lake. And it's called Just Get Here.
If I was a crow, I'd fly the roads that wind between these places, over back lanes and weathered veins where creeks have left their traces. Fruit trees planted long ago still bloom every other season. Fence won't keep the rabbits out, the gate's always open for some damn reason. The coastline to a place that's worn and storied. At the end of the chain, the Great Lakes drain into the old St. Lawrence. Ah, we've held a party or two, slept a million dreamers who woke to find the coffee on. Though the smoke is gone, the poetry lingers. If you're too tucked away and you can't see the sun, if you've something to say but you ain't got no one, whatever you do, if you have to, I'll use your thumb. Just get here, just come. See the light and where to make the turn off. But do call ahead, we might be in bed or riding with our clothes off. Riding on the wallpaper, riding on the womb. The poet's die lullaby still whispers faintly in the room. If you're too tucked away and you can't see the sun. If you're something to say, but she ain't got no one. Whatever you do, if you have to, I'll use your thumb. Just get here, just come. If you're too tucked away and you can't see the sun, if you're something to say and you ain't got no one, if your hands are getting cold, you don't know where you've become. If I was a crow, I'd fly the roads that wind between these places, where poems were read and hungers fed and hearts were warm and gracious. Did we keep a guest book somewhere, or are the records fading? We'll make a vow to start one now. There is still time, but it's not waiting.
Welcome to The Basement Review. This is Damian Rogers here with Leanne Simpson, Torkel Campbell, and Jason Collette. Welcome, Leanne.
Thanks, Damian.
And congratulations on your new record.
Thank you.
I feel like we've been really blessed with the opportunity to hear a lot of the pieces before everyone else, because you've performed a number of them on stage at The Basement Review in the last few years. Can you talk a little bit about like what the role of performing these pieces played in putting the record together?
Well, I think I'm coming to performance a little bit late in my career. And I one of the things that I don't like about writing is that it's sort of me living in my head and then me writing it down, and I'm not ever... The relationship kind of with the people that are reading my work is... there's a lot of distance between it. And so when I started to do readings of my work, readings can be really awesome, but they can also be really, really painful. And the kind of skill set that you have as a writer doesn't often is very different than the skill set of a performer. So that's one place where the record comes from. Another place is that I think that I wanted to bring the kinds of things that I think about and write about to a different audience. And I wanted to embody some of the politics and some of the artistic ideas that I work with, and create sort of like a little island of decolonial love. I wanted to be able to shift the energy into and to interact with the audience in a different way. And so performance became something that was really interesting and really, really challenging for me. And then combining sort of poetry and music has been a long process to figure out how to do it in a way that's really effective, and learning how to write to music and with music and working in a collaborative setting has been a really, really rich artistic experience for me. And The Basement Review has been a really big part of that for me, because it was where I could try some things out and where my work got introduced to a non-Native audience for the most part. So also the fear of performing with the caliber of musicians that play with The Basement Review was a fantastic motivator for us to become more excellent at what we were trying to do.
I'm interested in what you said earlier about the fact that through The Basement Review, you've started to see the opportunity in collaborating with different artists in reaching a larger non-Native audience.
Well, I made a decision when I first started writing that I was going to write for an Indigenous audience first. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that's radical. I just thought that I wanted, growing up, I wanted that connection, and I wanted to see myself affirmed and my experiences affirmed, whether it was through music or whether it was through art or writing, but I could never find that. And so, you know, I liked reading, but I didn't see myself in a good light in the Little House on the Prairie books, for instance. Right. So I wanted to, my intervention into writing was to write with Islands of Decolonial Love stories that affirmed and that made sense, and that my friends and the immediate community that I live in would like and would enjoy, and that I would like and enjoy, because I didn't see that sort of in the landscape. And that's very much because, you know, the publishing industry in Canada is really controlled by rich white men who aren't sort of interested in my voice for the most part. And so I made that as a deliberate choice and built an audience from there. And I think what's interesting to me now is that there's a truthfulness and honesty, I think, in my writing that a lot of Canadians appreciate and like, and they find interesting, and they find different than what they're reading in the more mainstream presses. And so I sort of felt like a lot of times I think Indigenous work gets dumbed down for Canadian audiences unfairly. And I think when I come at it from a grounded place and from a truthful place and from a place of strength, I think actually there's a good segment of the Canadian left that comes along with me. And so I sort of have kept that. I don't tone my stuff down at the Basement Review because it's a non-Indigenous audience. I just go in with an expectation that they're going to respect who I am and what I have to say, and that while it might be very different from what they've heard or seen in the past, that's okay, and that they're going to come with me. I think it's really important for me in everything I do, whether it's academic or politically or artistically, that I can stand by what I'm saying. I don't like that feeling where I'm like feeling like maybe I'm a sellout, or that I've softened something, or that I've sold some part of myself out for a larger audience or for a bigger publishing gig or for whatever. That's not the way that I want to live in the world.
Right.
And I think it's been a longer road for me, but it's been meaningful.
You saying that makes me think, like, you know, we're in this new era of politics in Canada, new government anyway, sunny ways, you know, everything's going to be okay now. I understand we're all going to be kind and reconcile. Is it, what happens next for Idle No More in terms of, it's hard, right, to try and fight for something that's a huge change in an atmosphere where everyone's decided things have gotten better. It's almost easier in a way when you have a figure like Harper to fight against because the lines are so clear. How do you negotiate that?
It's tremendously difficult because neoliberalism is a real fucker.
It really is a fucker. But I think it's almost done, Leanne. If you're patient, a couple of years, and I think we'll be finished.
Really
with
unraveling
it. And there'll be
quickly.
A new fucker, an even more horrible fucker.
Much easier to fight
post neoliberalism, which is going to be really horrible.
Well, I can't speak for Idle No More, but I can speak for myself, and it's gotten much more difficult to organize right now since
it has, eh?
Since the Trudeau party has started,
right?
Because I think Indigenous people are looking for hope, and I think that he presents this kind of photoshopped version of hope. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this, and he's saying that he's changing the relationship. But if you take a step back and sort of look at it with a critical eye, which I think is really important. But he's not making any changes or not even suggesting any changes to the substantive issues, to the substantive relationship between Indigenous peoples and the Canadian state, which is always sort of revolved around dispossession of our lands and maintaining that dispossession. So he's not talking about changing the comprehensive land claim policy. He's not talking about changing the root. He's not talking about changing that root problem. He is smudging, and he is acknowledging that he's on my territory, and he is, you know, picking Indigenous people that are comfortable expounding his same politics and putting them in his cabinet. So there's all these kind of superficial changes, but when you look at it, the things that matter to me and the things that would go a long way to fundamentally shifting the relationship, he's really similar to Harper.
Right.
And so that makes it very, very difficult to organize and very difficult to generate unity, because kind of the level of critique that you have to have is much more complex with Harper. Harper is very easy. He's very upfront about his racism and his hatred towards women and Indigenous people. And this is more of a trick.
And have you experienced that, like, within your own milieu, like in your family or friends, in terms of the older generation?
I think the older generation in the indigenous community remembers when Jean Chrétien was Minister of Indian Affairs. They remember liberalism. They know it. They're sort of warning, like, yo, this is a trick, you guys. Like, pay attention. Look a little deeper. I think it's the younger generation. A lot of my former students and a lot of the people that I was on the street with were sort of organizing around voting and around different political parties. So that's a shift. We've never seen so much Indigenous participation in the Canadian electoral politics. Mm-hmm. And that's in part because people saw a hope with Trudeau. Whereas I think that older generation was like, we've been through this before, guys.
Right. We've seen this con.
Those critiques within the Indigenous community were pretty marginalized. People were pretty upset about those of us that spoke out because they were like, come on, like, don't be killjoys. Just right. Let us feel good. Just let us have hope for 5 minutes.
It's funny, I just saw the poet C.A. Conrad, and he's like, I hate the word hope. Like, I hate when people speak about hope in politics because it's bullshit. It's a total trap. It's just about a future that never comes. Like, the only thing is the present.
I think for me, the hope lies in conversations like this, and the hope lies within people and not governments and not political parties. Figuring out what we want to change and making that change and embodying that change on the ground in real time right now. I think that in the long term is a really, really important organizing sort of value that I have. I think that change is going to come from us creating that change and from struggle and from organizing. I don't think it's going to come from a shift in government. And so that's where I want to put my energy into building the alternative with allies and with friends and inside my own community and inside my own family. And that work is really, really meaningful, and it makes me feel really good. When I see sort of the energy that I've put into my kids and how they're being raised and seeing them grow up immersed in Anishinaabe culture and feeling really proud and thinking that that's normal, the kinds of questions that they ask and the kind of solutions that they come up with and the kind of things that they do in their lives are very different than what I did. And so that gives me a lot of hope. I also think that, you know, if Idle No More right now was out on the streets organizing at the same level as it was during the winter of 2012-2013, and we all were actually around whatever issue that we think that Trudeau's going to fix, then that adds this level of pressure and that adds a level of presence and engagement that changes the situation for him. It changes the situation for the Liberals if you've got vocal organizing, which we had through the Harper era, but now we're like, oh, these guys have got this. We'll just watch Netflix.
That's a really good point, Leanne. I think that we have to double down on it, right? And not let up on the pressure just because someone's saying, okay, yeah, I totally get it, you know? To turn to aesthetics before we let you go, What was your desire in making this?
Well, I wrote the lyrics first, and then they came from a very intimate place. I wanted the album. I didn't want the album to be spoken word in the sense that spoken word is often has an aggression to it.
Right.
And so for me, I wanted it to feel extremely intimate. I wanted it to be like I was whispering these stories to people in a quiet place. And so the first thing I did was I got a vocal coach, and I did a lot of work on my own voice to be able to deliver the record that softly, but with that much vocal control. So I wanted to move away from the spoken word delivery, but I didn't want it to be kind of a performance poetry either. So I wanted to find this way that is really informed by singing, actually, and the intimacy of singing, but in a spoken way.
You don't actually sing in the record until very late in the record. Suddenly you sing. And it's a really extraordinary moment because you realize that you haven't seen this thing blossom all through this whole work of art. There's been this stillness and this tension. And then you sing and there's a very beautiful sense of healing in that. How do you resist singing? It must be hard, right, to not sing sometimes, isn't it?
Well, I grew up singing in the United Church and in church choirs. And so it was something I remember really, really clearly when I was 16 in the United Church, because my reserve was colonized by the Methodists. And so we're United Church people. We were United Church people because of that. And so when I was 16, they were doing that thing whether the minister could be gay or not. And we had this right. vote. And I was like a church.
That thing.
The vote. And it was like... I grew up in Wingham, the Alice Monroe town, so it's
like oh, really?
super wow. racist and homophobic. And there was only two of us that thought that having gay ministers was a good idea. So the youth group had this meeting, and it was like this, I was like this horrible lost sheep. And at that point, I was really interested in music, but there was not a lot, there was nothing going on. It was like the Footloose town, really. And the only thing that you could do if you were good in music, and my piano teacher told me that, she's like, you know what? I think you're good enough to be the church organist. Wow. And I was like, my life sort of, I played the tape out and I was like, oh my God, I got to get out of this. I got to get yeah. good at something else. I'll kill myself if this is what my life is.
You could use a higher ceiling. Then, yeah.
So I sort of, I went to university and I don't even know that it was conscious, but I loved singing as a kid, but I was singing all these songs that were not really good for my soul. And so I think this has been a long, like, this kind of, at first I was started to call my foray into music my midlife crisis, because I was really having to confront this. So I think you're right, like, hearing that is, like, that's a huge victory yeah. for me when I finally do sing. But I also think that I don't want to say that, like, people have already sort of said, like, so your next album will just be singing. I don't think that the spoken part is me being fucked up and dysfunctional. I think that it's, I like exploring sort of the intersections of writing and performance and music and singing. So I don't know what's going to happen with the singing, but it was a huge personal victory for me, because it's me beating the church in a lot of ways.
Mm. Wow. Mm.
Amazing.
Yeah. Beating the church is a great note to end on.
It's a really good place.
We try to finish every conversation with that
beating
sentiment.
Beating the church.
Thanks so much, Leanne.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.
HelloFresh is on a mission to bring cooking back into our lives with real whole ingredients that are healthier and we can feel good about. They do all the shopping, planning, and deliver step-by-step recipes and their ingredients so we can relax and enjoy all there is to love about cooking. They plan, they shop, you cook. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use code REVIEW50 to get 50% off your first box.